brought to you on UK Health Radio, The Natural Beauty Show, an in-depth look at the beauty issues that affect you.
Today, we are focusing on a topic of beauty that I'm really passionate about, and that's sustainability. I often find myself talking to industry experts and journalists about how, if we want to continue to consume beauty products at the rate we are, brands and manufacturers desperately need to find greener, cleaner, and more sustainable methods so that the impact on our planet is reduced significantly until it becomes minimal. This won't always be an easy task, but there are brands out there already pushing boundaries and beliefs to demonstrate that it is possible. First up is Etique, a female-founded ethical beauty brand that wants to stop millions of plastic bottles from ending up in landfills. Self-taught green entrepreneur Brianne West launched the zero-waste personal care brand to challenge the clean beauty industry to live up to its name. I'm delighted to be joined today by Brianne while she's here in the UK. She's a passionate environmentalist, social entrepreneur, and feminist, and I'd love to talk to her about a number of key issues.
First of all, let's talk a bit about your background and your journey into beauty.
Well, if you'd have told me 11 years ago that I'd be running a beauty company, I certainly wouldn't have believed you. Long story short, I was studying at university. I had this passionate belief that business is the way to solve as many of our social and environmental problems. I've also, strangely enough, I'm not actually hugely into beauty, where I certainly wasn't. I didn't know a great deal about the industry or anything, but I was into science and the cosmetics science world. And I taught myself basically formulation chemistry while I was at university. I realized that how horrendous the waste associated with the beauty industry is, and also the pretty dark supply chains and the stuff that goes on within that. And I decided I wanted to start a company that changed all that and pushed the beauty industry, as you said, to do better.
Yeah, absolutely. And the name Etique, I mean, a wonderful name. Why did you pick that brand name?
That comes with another long story. So the company actually started life as sorbet, and I picked that name because I wanted it to sound delicious.
Yeah.
Right? But about 2015, we'd just finished our equity crowdfunding rounds, and so I brought on 152 shareholders. It was our first ever capital raise, and about a week later, I realised we couldn't get the sorbet trademark in the USA and Australia, which is where we had told those shareholders we were going to go off and grow the company. So we had to change the name. We did it in about a week, and Etique was actually the legal name of the company because it means ethical in French. Mm. And that is exactly what I wanted Etique to be. So we realised that Etique was probably a better name all along, but it was a bumpy journey to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. It often is, isn't it? Because you can often start a beauty idea with one thing, but actually you end up with something quite different, but that actually represents your brand ethos quite a bit more. So talk to me a little bit about zero waste and what that means to you as a brand.
We used to portray ourselves as a zero waste brand, and I would say that simply because to the consumer, there was nothing left for them to deal with. So all our packaging is compostable, and by that I mean home compostable. Mm-hmm. So you can chuck it in a composting if you've got one, and composting rates here in the UK are really high. But if you're in, say, the USA, where they're not so high, you can pop it in a plant pot, because everyone has house plants these days, or you can recycle it if you needed to. And to me, that was how we could call ourselves zero waste. But over time, I've come to realise that really it's impossible for businesses to be zero waste if they're really encompassing their whole supply chain. So we've dropped the term because there is waste associated with every business's supply chain. So we're trying to minimise that. We've encouraged one of the largest warehouses in the USA, for example, to go completely plastic-free. Our warehouse in the UK is completely plastic-free. So when, to me, a company says they are striving for zero waste, it's not just their operations, it's also the ecosystem that surrounds and supports them that they encourage to do better.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, these days? It's more just what your brand is doing on your own doorstep, if you like. It's all about how can you trace this right the way through? Because consumers are really savvy these days, aren't they? They really understand that. So is that sort of almost like that B Corp approach, that very open, honest approach? Is that something that's really important to you?
Yeah, if you want to be a truly regenerative or sustainable brand, you need to be transparent about how difficult it actually is to do more good than bad. everything we do has an impact on the planet. Nothing that we do is good for the planet. That's collectively as people, because every time you buy something or make something, you know, you're using resources. So our ethos here is that we will give back more than we take. And we do that by trying to ensure that everything regenerates something. So our operations, we double offset our carbon emissions, for example. But and on top of that, we also plant, we have an antique forest with plantings around the world in areas where, unfortunately, the ecosystem has been disrupted. And we work with locals and indigenous communities within those areas to not only pay them to plant trees, but also pay them long term to be forest guardians. And that, you know, creates the word commerce is usually often a dirty word, but creates economic empowerment. So those are the sorts of things that they say they give back so much more than we actually take.
Yeah,
that's the kind of thing that I mean.
I mean, you know, I've been having this discussion quite a lot lately. I mean, obviously, I think COP26 that happened feels like a million years ago now, but last year. And, you know, it really started to open up consumers' mindset to the state that the planet is in and actually the responsibility that all industry and all consumers have. Now, one thing with beauty and self-care, of course, is consumers aren't willing to stop consuming at the level that they're consuming at the moment, which is pretty vast, isn't it? It's pretty huge. So actually, brands like yours finding alternative solutions to allow that consumption to continue, but in a way that isn't going to cause damage, that's really important. Do you try and encourage your competitor brands to follow suit?
Yeah, it's an interesting point you've mentioned. The best thing we can do for the planet, without question, is not to buy stuff we don't need.
Yeah.
And actually, this is something that came up a lot when we launched our lipstick range recently, because people said, but lipsticks aren't a necessity. And I mean, they're not, but neither is shampoo, if you want to look at it like that. But people are going to continue to buy them. So we provide a less wasteful, much more ethical version of the product they're going to buy anyway, right? But we do encourage people to try and really think, do I need this? That's why we really like multi-purpose products, because you buy less stuff for the same thing. But in answer to your question about competitors, yes, absolutely. Yes, they are competitors. I'm not going to go give them our formulas. But we do show, if they ask, if they come to us and they're open with this information, how did we start moving from a plastic-filled logistic warehouse to a plastic-free one? How did we offset our carbon? How do we calculate those emissions? How did we then lower them by 60% from 2018 to 2020? We are very open at sharing that information, because it's all well and good us succeeding as a business if our impact doesn't actually change anything, planet or people. You know, that's our ultimate goal. And we have seen particularly the last 3 years, just how much change the industry's gone through, because now everybody has a sustainability page on their website. I'm going to say a good chunk of it's greenwashing, but there are lots of brands out there that are trying, and there are lots of brands that are entering into the solid bar space, which is a good thing. And a lot of people think, oh, you must hate that. I actually love it. I have gone on record multiple times saying I want to put a bar in every shower. And by that, I mean inspiring other companies to do the same thing. The way we will change the world for everybody is by working together, not against one another.
Yeah, sharing knowledge, definitely. And there are always going to be brands like yourself that, you know, are leading the pack, that are brave enough to kind of stick the neck out, do the research and to get things going. But it's that sharing of knowledge and passing that down the line that's really important, isn't it? So tell me about your hero products. Most brands have them, but it sounds like yours are very, very unique products anyway, because you've talked a lot about the multi-uses, which I'm a real advocate for. I think it's excellent. So tell me about the hero products that you have in your range.
It's where hopefully my bias or my favourite products doesn't come out. We are known for our shampoo and conditioner bars, and certainly that's what we started with back in 2012. And they are still our biggest sellers now. They seem to be like the gateway bar that people move into face cleansers and moisturisers, which are also bar form, and perhaps a little bit less intuitive. I think our solid conditioners are probably our hero products. A lot of brands have released a solid shampoo bar, and for a variety of reasons, they're quite different to ours. Our manufacturing method and ingredients are quite different, which does mean they're a little bit more labour intensive. But our solid conditioners are heroes in regards that they can be used in about five different ways. You can use this in shower, shaving oil, a moisturizer, a leave-in conditioner, a conditioner, and in a pinch you can use it as a hair styler. So I like that way of getting people to understand formulas are often very similar, but just because they've got a different name on the bottle doesn't actually mean you can't use one product for two things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then we've got our more unusual products, like our solid moisturizers, which I like talking about, because people think, how on earth can a cream be solid? And really, it's exactly the same. So it's an oil and water emulsion, like the face cream you're used to, just as a lower concentration of liquid ingredients like water. So it still hydrates the same. It's just solid, so then we can therefore pack it in a compostable package.
And how does it work? How do you actually use that solid? How do you get it onto your face?
The face moisturizer, one of two ways. It comes in like a big cardboard lip balm tube, if you'd like to. You push it up from the bottom. You can either apply it directly onto hands. You can scrape some off with like a little spatula and then apply it to your face, or you can apply the tube directly to your face. It's entirely up to you. And the inevitable question always is, what about hygiene? They are absolutely safety tested and challenge tested, which is where they're inoculated with microorganisms and then ensure that they don't allow that growth. So they are perfectly safe to use directly on your skin, much like dipping your finger into a pot of cream would be. Yeah, it's no
or
different.
Or a deodorant stick is the same.
Exactly. Yeah. It's no different at all. And people, as with everything new, people are always saying, oh, no, that doesn't sound right. But we've thought about it. Don't panic. And then you just massage it into your face. And from that point, it's exactly the same.
Is a lot of what you do in terms of marketing your products about education? Because, you know, I've just asked you there because it's not familiar to have moisturiser in a sort of hard, solid form. You know, so do you find yourself having to teach consumers that, you look, just because you've been used to something a certain way for around 8 decades, let's be honest, some of these old formulas, you know, they've been around a very, very long time. And it's all about, look, you know, that might not be the most sustainable way of producing this product moving forward into the future if we're thinking about our, you know, damage to the planet, our harm to ourselves. So actually, if we create this product in a different form, it's much better for you. You just have to accept that you might be using it in a different way. Do you find that's the message you work a lot on?
Yes. People say, well, how can that be? And I just say, it's exactly the same. We just don't add the massive amount of water. So back in the 1900s, I think it was actually Schwarzkopf that invented the first liquid shampoo, because before then we didn't really use liquids at all because plastic bottles weren't as ubiquitous as they are now, or even at all, of course. And we immediately embraced the idea of a bottled product. But it wasn't actually until a couple of decades ago that we went from bar body products like soap to liquid body wash. And of course, the reason that brands and companies do that was because it's a lot cheaper to produce a bottle of a liquid product because it's mostly water. But once people understand that what you've effectively got is, if you imagine pouring a bottle of shampoo or conditioner or whatever into a saucepan, boiling all the water off, the stuff that's left is effectively what's in a bar, or certainly in one of our bars. I can't speak for all bars. So it's exactly the same ingredients in a salon quality product, just doesn't contain the water. That's really the only difference. And therefore, you add the water yourself a little bit and that you grab the bar on the head, it naturally mixes with the water that's in your shower, and voila, you've got a liquid shampoo from then on. So we have to do a lot of education because people don't believe that they'll work. They don't believe that they'll lather. They don't believe that they'll moisturise. We have to do our reviews, do a lot of the talking. But it's good because it gives us a talk about in a time when content is king. We never run out of stuff to say.
Well, absolutely. And I suppose, you know, like you say, it's based on the reviews. And I imagine you've got a really high customer return rate because people might come to your brand and think, I'm just going to dabble. I'm going to try these bars out. And then when they realise how effective they are, of course, that's when they're hooked and they just completely change their mindset, don't they? Do you find you've got a really high repeat customer rate?
We do, yeah. It's really nice. It's people, as I said earlier, they'll tend to start in a shampoo and they'll be like, oh, actually, this is brilliant. I love it. And then they'll move on to something else. That's why we do a lot of trialing and sampling, because there is that massive scepticism that it will work. But once they try it, they're usually hooked.
Yeah, brilliant. And tell me about some of your challenges that you're likely to face moving forward. I mean, I assume you've got new products in development. Are there any big challenges that you want to combat as a brand?
Yeah, one of the biggest things we are looking at doing is manufacturing out. So all of our products are currently made in Aotearoa, New Zealand, which is wonderful. But to me, it doesn't make a great deal of sense from an environmental standpoint. Yeah. So we are looking to manufacture in the Northern Hemisphere as well as in Aotearoa, New Zealand. That we are hoping, now the world has opened a little bit back up again, we can start re-looking into that. That way we can manufacture closer to our biggest markets, which are the USA and the UK. But of course, we would always still manufacture in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And because we do manufacture our products in such a different way and we don't use a lot of the more machine-led ways to create these products, it is a little harder manufacturing and scaling to keep up with massive growth has always been one of our biggest challenges. We do have lots of new products in the pipeline. We've got some really big ranges coming out next year. We are revamping some of our existing products to make them easier to use. So there's lots of exciting developments on the way. And then we have a really solid direct trade program. So we work directly with a lot of producers of our ingredients. And as we grow bigger and use more and more of each ingredient, something else will open up And what I'm hoping is we can help work with some of the communities in the Pacific Islands to develop a fair trade corridor, if you like, for some ingredients like cocoa butter and stuff, which we currently source out of the Ivory Coast.
Well, that's lovely, because we often, I mean, obviously here in the Northern Hemisphere especially, a brand called Lush is a brand, I'm sure you're familiar with it,
yes,
is a brand that, you know, is becoming very well known for their regeneration projects, and they're working at agricultural level and ensuring that there's crop rotation and there's safety, you know, there's economic safety for those farmers in producing that ingredient. I think for a lot of consumers, what they don't always appreciate is the time it takes to grow the sort of ingredients that some of these lovely natural beauty products use, and it's quite significant, isn't it? And so, I mean, that regeneration is something that I'm really interested in exploring moving forward. So keep us in contact with that, because we'd love to hear more as you do it. So where can people buy your products? I mean, I'm pretty sure it's a brand. I mean, I'm familiar with it. I see it everywhere, actually, in UK shops, which is brilliant. But where can people get hold of your products if they're looking to try it out after hearing this?
Holland & Barrett. So we're in about 90% of Holland & Barrett stores, apart from the smaller health food themed ones. We're in about 300 Boots around the country, with expansion coming near. And online, of course.
Yeah. And what's your website address?
Etique.co.uk.
Lovely. And I assume people can find there lots of information, like on the education points.
Yes. We have a lot of blog posts and stuff on, and everything you could possibly ask. And if there is something we haven't addressed, we're always looking for inspiration for more educational content. So send it our way.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Brianne. It's really interesting, and I'm really passionate about, you know, getting behind brands like yours, which really have a purpose, because I think long gone are the days where people just want to use a product without really truly understanding the ethics and morals of the brand and being able to get behind it. So it's a real inspiration. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Upcycle beauty is a method of making new products by using ingredients left over from other processes. This operation primarily takes food waste produce that would often otherwise be thrown away and left in landfill, and gives it another life as a product ingredient within skincare. It may sound odd, but upcycled beauty has a real potential for a substantial positive environmental impact. This isn't just a wacky marketing trend, but a creative response to a real waste and climate problem. One of the pioneers of upcycled beauty is Anna Brightman. She's the co-founder of Upcycle Beauty, the brand known for pioneering byproduct beauty trend. When Anna discovered that more than 500,000 tonnes of coffee grounds that are consumed each year by the UK are sent to landfills, she decided to start collecting coffee from cafes across London and transforming them into skincare products. Since launching Upcycle, she has saved over 450 tonnes of coffee. In 2020, Anna and her team launched the Upcycle range into 2,000 plus retail doors across the UK and USA. They tripled the size of their team and launched seven new products, all at the height of a global pandemic. As a result, she's been included in the Forbes 30 Under 30 list for 2021.
Lovely having you back on the show, actually, Anna. We've spoken before, but great to have you here again. So for those that didn't listen to the previous show, let's just start with a bit of background about UpCircle, the brand, and how it came about.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to catch up with you again. Thanks for having me on the show once more. For anyone who's not aware, at UpCircle, our core concept is around promoting the circular economy, as the name implies. And we do this through our innovative use of upcycled ingredients in every single formulation that we release, as well as a circular approach to packaging with a full packaging return scheme on 100% of our range that operates across the country. And of course, we've got bold ambition to roll that out further afield in the future. We've been going for just over 6 years now, although to be completely honest, it feels like longer.
Yeah.
It's been a real roller coaster of emotions. But we're kind of always pushing forwards. We're really strongly committed to continually evolving. So not only is that through new product development, but also refining the products that we've also already put out and making them better and better and better. So yeah, it's tough being the first to do what we're doing in such a core way. But the reception has been absolutely incredible in these early years, and the growth that we've had is phenomenal. So it's really, really exciting.
Yeah. I mean, it really epitomizes where I think society's mindset is now with, you know, we all want to consume beauty and self-care products at the same level as we always have been, but we're becoming increasingly aware that actually some of the ways that products are manufactured or packaged can actually have a really detrimental effect on the environment, can't it? And I know that, so upcycling the ingredients. So I know you started with coffee granules, didn't you? Coffee beans, mm-hmm. the leftover shards really that come out of coffee shops. But mm-hmm. since then you've gone on and you've used quite a few other ingredient types. Tell us the sort of ingredients you end up taking in from other industries.
Yeah, so coffee was the initial kind of penny drop moment, as people describe it, realizing how much coffee was going to waste each year. Obviously, coffee is not going to wane in its popularity anytime soon. Yeah. And I think lots of people know now the benefits that coffee can have in skincare. Caffeinated skincare is one of the most highly searched things on the internet when people are looking for skincare products. So that was where we started. And I feel like the storyline behind that is very tangible. You can kind of imagine, you know, particularly as we're a brother-sister duo, yeah. That real startup story of every weekend, me and my brother going around London, collecting yeah. up coffee grounds at the end of the day from each coffee shop. But as mentioned, we've kind of diversified our upcycled ingredient portfolio a lot in the last 6 years. So now we're working with over 15, close to 20, but lots more in the mix that we're trying to kind of refine in order to get them ready for use in skincare. Those include things like chai spices that are left over after making chai syrups that are, again, sold on an industry scale. We use those as natural fragrance in our palm oil free soaps. We have residual fruit waters that are left over from the juicing industry. So water was a real target ingredient for us to find a more sustainable alternative to. And I know that sounds crazy, but most skincare products have water as their first ingredient, and that water is heavily processed, which is environmentally costly. So we use the water that's evaporated off fruit juice to make juice concentrates. We take the evaporated water and we use things like kiwi water, bergamot water, mandarin fruit water in a range of our products. Then we have like the powder section. So they are largely powdered fruit stones. So we've got olive stones that are powdered and used in our face mask, and they create this beautiful texture in the products, as well as being packed with antioxidants as well. What else? We've got apricot stone powder. We've got argan shell powder, which is a byproduct of the argan oil industry. And then we've got like the oils, like the extracts. So we've got blueberry extract. We've got date seed extract. We've got maple bark extract. So as you can tell, a whole host. That's just off the top of my head, with loads more to come. So it's really, really exciting.
Such a lovely cocktail as well. I mean, it's amazing because you're actually creating such innovative products as well, aren't you? You know, using byproducts that wouldn't normally have been extracted and used in this way. So actually for the consumer, really, really exciting time. So talk to me a bit about the partnership you have with Repurpose Global.
Yeah, so Repurpose Global are kind of the company behind our plastic negative certification. Mm. So we do a CSR report each year, and we look at, you know, the brilliant things that we've done. But as I mentioned right at the start, we are wholeheartedly committed to constantly evolving. And I think in the skincare market, my God, the competition is fierce. And you have to continually push to be better and better and better, or else someone will come along, you know, a way bigger brand and say, oh, do you know what, we're going to claim upcycling or whatever, and then you're done. So and also, you know, we're a young brand, there's only 15 of us behind the scenes, and so we have these targets in place, but it takes time in order to make them a reality. So the performance of our product always has to come first, and the use of for a customer. So for example, a pipette for a serum is something that still the vast majority of customers would opt for, as opposed to having something completely plastic free where they're then sort of pouring the product out into their hand or something. The flip side of that, of course, is that having an appropriate dispenser for your product means you use less of it and therefore there's less waste, etc. So what we wanted to do was proactively start removing plastic from the environment so as to counterbalance any usage of plastic that our brand contributes to. So this is both direct plastic, and the example there of a serum would be a serum pipette would be a perfect example, but also indirect plastic, which is much more difficult for us to control. And that's things like, you know, one of our big suppliers of an ingredient or one of the retailers that we supply, they have very strict rules around how you send your products to their big warehouses. And I can tell you that they involve a lot of paperwork and a lot of shrink wrap and excessive uses of plastic, which, you know, is really difficult from our side when you're kind of forced into it. So going back to Repurpose Global, we wanted to, one of our targets for this year, which we actually managed to do in February, so it's a one we ticked off quite quickly, was get a plastic negative certification. And what that means is that we pay the wages of waste workers out in Goa in India to recover ocean-bound plastic from within 10 kilometers of the coastlines there. And we pay the wages, the quantity, the amount that means that they can recover twice the amount as our brand uses, both through direct and indirect plastic. So that's a really important collaboration for us.
I mean, that's the fantastic initiative. I mean, we know the stats, you know, I think something like 11 billion tons of plastic enter the oceans every year. I mean, it's insane. And so, you know, quite rightly, the media has really kind of demonized plastic. But I've always said, actually, yes, virgin plastic, there's no need to keep creating new plastic, but we still have an issue with plastic that is in existence because it lives for such a long time. I think it's around 400 plus years. And so, you know, that's a huge problem for us to deal with. So these sorts of initiatives are great, aren't they? Because you're not only giving back to a community that needs work and needs income, but you're helping them to help their localized environment and then, and helping your brand as well. So you've got such a strong brand personality, you know, I mean, I think it very much reflects who you are, just talking to you now. You know, you've got a very inquisitive nature. You definitely, you're knowledgeable. You obviously read an awful lot and research an awful lot. And you know, so is that reflective of your customer as well? Who likes to buy upcycle products?
Oh my goodness. I sometimes think that we've just we've got some of the toughest customers in the world. And to be honest, you know, that's a part of it. And we've also created this tribe whereby we use them in our decision-making process, which is an amazing thing, but also a very, very difficult thing because they do feel like very much part of our brand and part of our, you know, what we create, and they're incredibly passionate. And we harness that passion in order to make sure, again, that we are making the best products that we can. So, I mean, as one example, we've got a closed Facebook group called the Upcycle Insiders of our kind of top spending or most engaged customers. And whenever it comes to creating new products, they'll be the very first to get the lab samples and feedback to us and say, okay, I hated this, but I loved this. And then we'll use the information that we gather from that. Because again, I mean, what an incredible hub of information for us.
Your own research group.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So we do kind of create our own little monster there. But equally, it keeps us at the top of our game. Nothing will be let slip. They know also a hell of a lot about absolutely everything. And sometimes, you know, we might miss something and they'll be like, oh, have you heard, like, look at this research paper, or they have very specific industry experience and say, oh, you know, the business I work for has been doing a research project on this, you might want to factor that in. And we had someone talking about how sugarcane harvests disrupt the
young cubs of like leopards and stuff, and I was like, oh my god, imagine if we then started going down the bioplastic sugarcane route, and then you find out that actually there's a huge animal welfare issue there or whatever. So yeah, it's both a blessing and a curse, but we're proud to have such a passionate audience.
I mean, that's awesome. And what sort of, I know there'll be people listening to the show today that are, you know, avid Upcircle fans, and they'll be thinking, well, I'm not on the insiders group. At what level do people get invited into that group? I'm sure people would be very curious.
So it's either on like amount of orders placed, amount of money spent, or also we keep an eye out on our socials and things like that, or people who send us, or, you know, they might be subscribe to our newsletter, but they engage with our newsletters and they'll reply to us, and we can send like manual invites all the time, which we do. So when we see people that are, you know, posting their routine on their Instagram all the time or just shouting about us, then we you know, we can do manual invites as well, which we do a lot. Anyone basically who shows a real passion for what we're doing, or, you know, would like to get involved.
No, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And I think, you know, you spoke about millennials, you know, who being really passionate about their, their causes. And so to be able to get up close and personal with a brand that they love, what a brilliant way of engaging. So tell us where people can buy the products.
Yeah, so the easiest place would be our website. So that's upcirclebeauty.com. We also have different websites for the different regions. So if you're purchasing for someone in a different country, then we have eu.upcirclebeauty.com and then us.upcirclebeauty.com as well. In the UK online, we're with places like Ocado, Feel Unique, Look Fantastic, Beauty Bay. We'll be launching soon with Anthropologie, Space NK, River Island. And then in stores, you can find us in Holland & Barrett and in Sainsbury's as well.
Brilliant. So nice and widespread now. I mean, to be honest, your brand pops up everywhere, which is brilliant because your products really are lovely. And I just think the ethos behind what you're creating is the way that actually the beauty industry as a whole needs to start thinking about where to go. There's so many ways I think that beauty brands can really help to solve some of these major planetary issues that we have on our hands. So well done for doing that, Anna. And thank you so much for joining me again today. It's really been really interesting to hear your intelligent point of view all the time. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Wow, you've really boosted my confidence. That's really lovely.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Lastly today, I want to talk to a brand that are pioneers in the global wellness system for mind, body and skin. The brand is Inure, and their proposition is to encourage lifestyle and wellness to meet. That's why their coaching and support system use the power of nature and science delivered through nutrition and lifestyle routines. Inure has devised a natural skincare program which was created by Marion Assoud, the ex-CEO of premium French beauty brand By Terry, and nutritionist Valerie Espinasse. Recently, they announced the launch of their first skincare supplement, Revive, formulated with broccoli seed extract and probiotics to support gut health and balance the skin barrier, as well as antioxidants to help protect against cell aging. As a mother of two young children, Marion is also very aware of the knowledge and influence that the younger generations are having on the direction of beauty brands. So to tell me all about Inure and discuss the future of beauty, I'm delighted to be joined by Marion.
Hi, Natalie. Thank you for having me. So I've been in the beauty industry for almost 20 years. I did a lot of marketing, commercial, and I was the CEO of, as you said, the French makeup brand By Terry for 8 years. Yeah. And I left my role almost a year ago in order to dedicate my time to this new adventure called Inyor, mm-hmm. pronounce it Inyor. Yeah. Like in your body, mind, and skin, because I wanted to work more on how the skin works in a relation with the body. So for me, having spending all those years in the cosmetic industry, more into makeup and how you basically cover your skin, mm-hmm. I wanted to work on the step zero. Work on the skincare, but in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me about the sort of brand's ethos. What's driving you with this particular brand?
So there's a lot of cosmetic brands, as you know, but I wanted a skincare that will understand what the skin needs. Mm. And this is why I decided to formulate the brand with a French nutritionist named Valérie Espinasse. And because in nutrition, you're not treating the symptoms, you're treating the cause.
Yeah.
And by understanding how your skin works and the cause of your symptoms, and by treating the cause, then you can have the right answer. For me, it was interesting to work and develop the brand with the nutritionist and, of course, make all the formulas approved by the dermatologist.
Yeah.
But to take nutrition philosophy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, skin is the biggest organ of the body. So it makes sense to treat it as and to treat the health of the skin as you're treating the health of your body.
Yeah.
So it made sense for me to work with nutritionists in order to understand what will be helpful, what we can address skin health. Yeah. And then treat the symptoms.
Yeah, absolutely. And not many people are really very aware of that connection between gut health and skin health, are they? They don't really recognize that actually the foods you consume, the amount of water you intake, it's huge effects. I mean, you can spend hundreds of euros, can't you, on skincare to just, you know, try to cover up. But actually, you're not helping yourself, are you?
It's exactly that. Mm-hmm. When you realize that everything is connected, mm-hmm. and this is why we wanted to have the brand name, it's mm-hmm. a 360 and it's all connected. And gut health, we do realize that what you eat has an impact on your skin. Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, you cannot just treat the gut and not address anything else. So there are so many different things that you need to work on in order to achieve healthy skin. You need to sleep properly. You need to be peaceful. You need to eat certain ingredients at a certain time, etc. It's a 360 journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a bit about the ingredients that you use. And I know that broccoli seed extract is something that you draw on quite a lot. You know, most people are familiar with broccoli. It's something they perhaps eat a few times a week, especially in the UK. We seem to be obsessed with broccoli on our plates. But when talking about skin health, what benefits are there from this particular ingredient?
And you know why you're eating broccoli? You're eating broccoli because, I mean, people are obsessed with broccoli because it's basically the cruciferous vegetable with the highest sulforaphane content.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? What is sulforaphane? Nobody knows that.
Yeah.
Because but sulforaphane is basically the antioxidant contained in the broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
So by eating broccoli, you're like having the impression of protecting your immune system, protecting your cells, etc. The problem is that eating broccoli is good, but the level of the digestion or the method of cooking can damage the integrity of the antioxidant broccoli, the antioxidant part of the broccoli, which is the sulforaphane. So yes, it's good to eat broccoli, but are you sure that you're maximizing its potential for your health?
Yeah.
It's not. There are so many things. So what we've done is that we extract the sulforaphane from the broccoli seed, and we encapsulated it in order to guarantee the antioxidant part of the broccoli.
Yeah.
And we name it sulforadiene.
Okay.
Which is the only component in the market, in the cosmetic market, having encapsulated the sulforaphane of broccoli.
So tell me about the products. I mean, I understand you've got a supplement that people can take, but then presumably you're also using these ingredients within lotions and what have you as well. So people are getting the double content.
So it's all connected, as I said. With Inu, what we try to achieve is to achieve healthy skin and to give to customer the right program to achieve healthy skin. So, and it's an in and out program. So in with a supplement, and the foundation of a healthy skin is antioxidant and protection.
Mm.
So the guarantee the integrity of your gut health, as you said before. So with the broccoli seed plus probiotics, you guarantee a good supporter for your skin. You guarantee the level of antioxidant and protection for your gut that will have an impact on your skin. So this is the answer with inside, but what are you putting outside?
Yeah.
So that's why we developed with the nutritionist the right recipe of skincare that will give what the skin needs in order to be healthy.
Yeah.
And to be healthy, a skin needs what? You need vitamin and nutrient. You need hydration and you need protection.
Yeah.
This is the three things that you need. And then if you restore the three things, then you can, you will reduce dehydration, acne prone, etc. Yeah. Again, treating the cause, not the symptoms.
Yeah.
So we selected three key ingredients that would maximize those three things.
Mm-hmm.
So matcha, which is green tea.
Yeah.
It's full of antioxidant, obviously, but also vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin A, minerals like zinc. So it's supercharged in nutrients and vitamins.
Yeah.
Then we use aloe vera.
And
aloe vera from like a specific island with 50% more hydration power. You know that aloe vera is a wonderful source of hydration.
Yeah.
And then prebiotics and probiotics in order to protect the microbiome of the skin.
Yeah. I mean, it just sounds so wholesome and lovely, actually. It's such a nice approach to skin health. And, you know, I speak to a lot of people that are suffering from, you know, like you've said, acne-prone skin, or, you know, we're all facing quite a lot of stresses, both internal stresses and environmental stresses, aren't we, every day? And so this approach just feels like a really healthy, positive approach to your skin health. So I think a lot of people can relate to that. So tell me about where people can actually buy your products. Are they just online, or are they available in retail units? Well,
they will be available in retail soon. And for the moment, it's online. We just launched like 2 months ago.
Yeah, wow, amazing. And have you had a lot of interest so far? I mean, I imagine, you know, people are so much more savvy now, aren't they? They understand more
there
about this.
Are, and I do think that, I mean, honestly, you can find all the fancy ingredients everywhere, but with, I mean, the right recipe, it's not very common.
Yeah.
And I do think like skincare is more about the recipe and the association of the right ingredient than just the ingredient themselves.
Yeah.
And yes, and people are looking for more and more natural product, but efficient.
Yeah.
Because I mean, being clean today is obvious. It's, I mean, who wants to put some bad ingredient like toxin into your skincare? I mean, it's nonsense. Mm. But when efficiency is more complicated to achieve with natural ingredients, because you need to keep the integrity properly.
Yeah.
So finding the right association, etc., is not that common. It's not that easy.
Yeah. I mean, I often, when I'm talking to people about, you know, the difference between sort of clean and natural products and the more traditional route, the more familiar route that we've all sort of grown up with, really, you know, there's always this argument from other brands saying that, you know, clean and natural beauty disregards science. But that's just not true, is it? Because in order to make these products, you have to involve science, don't you?
Of course you have to, because, I mean, yes, you need to do the right association, and you need to, I mean, you need to know ingredients, you need to know biology, etc., to be able to associate the right vitamin with the right nutrient, etc. So yes, and it has to be efficient. I mean, natural beauty doesn't mean like just a natural ingredient, that's it.
Yeah.
It's very important. I think for me, it's super key.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, or I always find it quite frustrating, because the association, especially here in the UK, with natural products can be that people assume it's just a bunch of hippies stuffing flowers into bottles. And that's just not what it is at all. It doesn't, you know, that's not what it is. Actually, I think it's a way more advanced way of making beauty products, because you're actually looking more at the world around us, more at what nature provides. I think that's way more sophisticated, actually.
I think so. It's like saying that like the environment it's for hippie. I mean, my God, I mean, natural, not having any toxin and having natural ingredient into your skincare, for me, it's now obvious. It's the base. So it's, and we want science efficiency in skincare.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you've said that, because that really, I find that incredibly frustrating. The other frustrating aspect of the kind of industry that yourself and I are associating ourselves with in that clean beauty area is there's a lot of what we call clean washing and green washing, isn't there? How do you feel about this as a brand that's doing things right? You know, and there are higher costs associated with better quality ingredients, aren't there? And making, you know, these claims and actually being able to substantiate them. How do you feel about brands? It's not normally actually the larger brands, isn't it, that try to pull the wool over consumers' eyes. Do you find that really frustrating as a brand owner?
Yes, but I do think like consumer are more and more aware.
Yeah.
And they are not, I mean, that they can see when it's authentic and when it's not, when it's completely marketed. And I mean, it's from day one. I mean, everyone wants to take an opportunity to have some visibility. But thanks to actually social media, more and more, I mean, brands can be in direct relationship with consumer. And when you are in direct relationship, you can't fake it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think it will always happen like this, but. Mm. And you know what? At the end, it's for the best, because, I mean, even if the bigger one takes, yes, it's a marketing angle, but at the end, they're talking about the cause.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, exactly, we are all going to the same direction, but the consumer is not blind. Yeah. They know exactly what they are buying, and when they are buying big brand, I mean, they know what they're buying.
Yeah.
They're more aware than even brands themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think also you look at the younger generations, you know, what we label as Gen Z these days, you know, but they are so informed and spend way more time considering brands, what ethics they want from the products they use, not just in beauty, in everything, in food, you know, in travel. They're just so much more aware, aren't they? And this is really going to drive brands, isn't it?
And this is actually a challenge for brands. I mean, I came from a big brand and I'm launching, I mean, a new brand.
Yeah.
And you can see that you need to be fully transparent, because in front of you, you have young consumer
yeah.
that, I mean, they're questioning you all the time, which was not the case like 10 years ago. 10 years ago, a brand would bring something to the market and consumer would follow it.
Yeah.
Today, consumer are driving it. And I mean, the best for me market studies I'm doing is talking to my kids. Yeah. They are 13 and 9 years old.
Absolutely.
And I can tell you, like, I mean, they can see if it's good or not good. They can see if what you are saying is right or you're faking. I mean, this is a totally new way to communicate.
It really is. I mean, I'm the same. We're a blended family of 4 children and we've got, you know, the similar. So we have a 6-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old and 14-year-old. So we're in the same stage. You know, they spend a lot of time on not necessarily the youngest ones on social media, but they are affected and influenced by what's being talked about on social media. So they're, you know, and they're looking to their peers. They're kind of, you know, the next level up, the teenagers, to kind of influence them. And so, you know, and they'll turn around to me and say, Mom, we shouldn't buy this product because of X, you know. And you think, wow, okay.
Exactly.
And you have to listen to them, right? I mean, you know, the persuasion they have over the parent spending is enormous. And so this is, you know, and they are the future spending power. They are the future choice makers. So, yeah.
Exactly. So it's really like a chance having them around.
Yeah.
Because then you can see if something is correct or not. And sometimes having 20 years of experience in this industry is not like it's good, but it doesn't mean that you are going to succeed. But listening to your actual future customer is much more beneficial, especially because they are around this natural environmental protection, etc., for so many years. I mean, we have not been born.
No, that's the difference, isn't it? So, you know, to them, they've grown up in an environment where recycling is encouraged, where, you know, eating healthily is encouraged. You know, our generation, we didn't have this. We just didn't have this. You know, I think of some of the products I used on my skin, some of the things that, you know, some of the things I used to sort of do, you know, throwing waste. You know, it's just horrendous. And you think, well, our children have grown up in a world that was not acceptable, and actually there's better choices out there. And so so it's a great time for your brand. I think this is, you know, I think for me, you know, at the moment, these newer brands that are coming out, even though, you know, we're both very aware how difficult it is to grow a brand in an industry that is huge and incredibly overwhelmed by different options, but, you know, I definitely think that this is the future, isn't it? This is the future of beauty, without a doubt.
I think so. It's I mean, within you or not, but I do think that it's this future of beauty. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. So could you tell us the website address that people can go to find out more about your products?
It's www.inyourbeauty.com.
Lovely. Brilliant. So, and I assume you also are on social media. So you have an Instagram feed.
In Your Official on Instagram.
Okay. Lovely. Yeah. Brilliant. Because I'm sure people will want to go straight there and check it out as well. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been lovely chatting to you, and, you know, your years of experience, and you must have seen so many changes in this industry in that time as well. So, yeah. Well, this is a really exciting brand and I hope people can go and check you out. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Natalie. Thank you for your time. Thanks.
Brought to you on UK Health Radio, The Natural Beauty Show, an in-depth look at the beauty issues that affect you.